Kayo'y nakikinig sa SBS Filipino.
Mga kababayan, so this is it. We have on the studio Jessica Alisa Cero, known as Montaigne, our 2021 Eurovision contestant, ang isang napakagaling na art pop songwriter and singer. Thank you for coming, Montaigne.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
It's such an honor to have you here in the Filipino program. So today I'll be asking you a lot about that Filipino blood, maybe a quarter of the blood coursing through your veins. But first, maybe let's talk about you being Montaigne. What does Jessica and Montaigne have in common?
Well, Jessica is obviously me. And I took the name Montaigne from a French philosopher named Michel de Montaigne, who existed in the 16th century, I think it is now. I haven't had to talk about him for a long time. And I suppose I ended up selecting the name because I thought that his process, his creative process, resonated with my own, which is mostly just creating things quite randomly, I guess, or sort of compulsive or impulsively, in the sense that there's no true direction. You kind of just start and then see what happens. That was the sense I got from him. And also it was a Frenchman, and I was studying and spoke French at the time. And just also when I did the Wikipedia search on him, it turned out that he visited a place that had the same name as the high school I attended, which was Loretto. So I was like, ah, that's many connections. May as well pick him out. But I think like the key sort of connection would probably be the way that we approach sort of creativity and art.
Must be meant to be.
It must be meant to be, yes, indeed.
There's a lot of connection there. Let's talk about the Eurovision. The 2021 Eurovision Song Contest is happening soon in Netherlands, and it will be broadcasted exclusively here on SBS from May 19th to 23rd. And Australia will once again compete in this world's biggest song contest with you, of course. However, we heard the news that you won't be able to fly out, or you won't be performing abroad. Instead, you will be doing your performance here in Australia. So what was your initial reaction upon hearing the news?
I think it was a decision that was sort of a long time coming. We were aware from the beginning of the year that it would have to be made like quite close to when Eurovision would actually be held. And I think weighing up sort of all the coronavirus cases that were happening over in Europe and the fact that there's sort of a third wave going on, I kind of expected that I wouldn't be able to go. So when I heard, I guess my expectations were already at such a level that it meant that I wasn't truly disappointed. Like, I kind of was resigned to the reality of it, I suppose, which, like, it still sucks. A lot of my friends have been like, dude, that really, really sucks. And I feel like they've been feeling my feelings for me, maybe, because I don't know, I waited up yesterday and I was just like, maybe it does suck that I don't ever get to like be on the stage. But, I don't have any control in the matter. So like, may as well just roll with the punches. And we've got like a pre-recorded performance, which we're going to send in, and I'm pretty proud of it. So I think it's going to be fine all in all.
Oh, well, but we're still thrilled to see your performance in whatever platform, that's for sure.
Awesome.
But it's going to be like 2 years in a row, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's bad luck, but it's, bad luck that everyone in the world is enduring, not just me, yeah. So.
But what did you do to pick up yourself from that disappointment?
I think, I'm now moving on to sort of like other projects. Now that I only really have promo to do for Eurovision, since all the performance stuff has been finished, I'm starting to record new music, for after Eurovision. And I've been working on a video game, like doing some songs for it. And I'm about to start work on doing music for a play in Sydney. So there's stuff going on for sure.
Talking about COVID-19, how did the isolation of 2020 affect your creative process, your songwriting?
I think my taste evolved a little bit. I have fairly broad listening taste, but what I want to create at any given time is quite like fleeting and mercurial. Like I change my vibe a lot, I guess. I'm trying to think what the word that isn't vibe is. But I like to do a lot of different things within a very short span of time. And the thing I sort of started to fixate on last year and that has somewhat continued on to this year is hyperpop, which is just like this genre of music that's like, it's quite intense and noisy pop and glitchy pop. And that, I mean, for the first part of the pandemic, I didn't know songwriting and I didn't really do anything musically creative, I don't think. I sort of just stuck to gardening and video games and stuff. And then I sort of had a spark of inspiration again after doing like a live stream performance. And I was like, I need to get back in the studio. And it just happened that once I got back into the studio, I'd sort of, my listening had veered towards this hyperpop thing. And then that informed sort of what I wanted to make. And it sort of stayed there a little bit. So I think, I don't know, I can't trace the link between the pandemic and like my listening changing gear in that way, but that's just where it sort of ended up, I guess.
And now with the song Technicolor, written and produced specifically for Eurovision, so what inspired Technicolor?
Well sonically, the inspiration, key inspirations probably would have been like Rina Sawayama's music, who's this like beautiful Japanese UK artist who released an album, I think it was last year, called Sawayama, that's amazing. And it draws heavily, I think, on like 90s, early 2000s sort of sounds, like Britney Spears and, I'm trying to think of anyone else. All those kinds of like girl groups of the early 2000s or even like Janet Jackson and stuff. And something that like occurs a lot in that kind of music is like orchestra hits, which is sort of what you hear in the pre-chorus of Technicolor, which is like the boom, I got power, boom, boom, that stuff. I was really obsessed with the drama of those. Like they're so, I find them so over the top and just so punchy and sharp, and I just really wanted that to be in the song, and I wanted the song to have that like a really sudden dramatic twist and turn from like the sort of pensive and ruminating feel that it starts with. I wanted to have that contrast, and also that I like when songs have some kind of resolution. Like I think there is great merit in a song that's just sad all the time and doesn't have a resolution, because sometimes you just need to like soak in those songs. But mm-hmm. I really like a pop song that sort of can encompass both the recognition of adversity and of difficult emotion, and also sort of assert like real power that comes from the individual as well. You know, no one is just like one mode, everyone's a bunch of different things all at once. So that's sort of what I wanted for the song, I guess.
Since we've been talking about this so catchy and powerful anthem, Technicolor, can you give us a little, or maybe just a line, of for our Filipino listeners?
Sure. Everything is frustrating. Everything moves along faster than I can relate to. I got power, yeah. Midnight is the hour, yeah. Time to take off your cloaks. Anyway, there it is.
Wow, Technicolor. That's so lovely. The song is so powerful, so catchy. And the lyrics, it speaks to everyone. Now, you mentioned in a tweet that your ethnic background is a mixture of Spanish, Filipino, French, and
Argentinian. Yeah.
So how does it feel growing up in all these four different ethnic backgrounds?
It's strange because I grew up with some of the culture of those cultures, like Filipino predominantly, I think, a little bit Argentinian, but mostly Filipino, just because my family had sort of friends and family around that were Filipino in Sydney. Like my mum was born and raised in Manila until she was about 18 or 19. My dad was born and raised in Argentina, I think he was, until he was 7 or 8. And then they both lived in Sydney and Canberra. And I think, like, my parents, my mom speaks Tagalog and Spanish. My dad speaks Spanish. But the thing is, like, they never spoke those languages to me and my sister. They spoke it to each other to keep secrets from us. So I sort of like never learned the language, which I think is like, I think it's incredibly important to be connected by your mother tongue to, in order to feel connected to the culture as well. And so it's a bit strange, like, not having that. And also, like, there was a period during my adolescence where we didn't see like everyone we were connected to as much. So like during like quite crucial developmental years, I didn't like get as, like the most culture I got from my parents that was, you know, from our origins was like Filipino food, like ginatang and sinigang and like all that stuff and adobo and stuff. And like, it was nice. And like my whole, it felt a little bit, like, because my dad has a really Australian accent, which is really funny because he's very Argentinian, and my mom, like, she went to international school in the Philippines, so it's kind of like this weird American Filipino Australian hybrid. And like our culture is still living in them and in me, but it also feels like coming to Australia, although it's like a wonderful, safe, like comfortable place, like, you know, back in the 80s and 90s and beforehand, there were all these sort of like assimilation policies and stuff like that. And people were encouraged like not to speak their language and not to practice their culture and stuff like that. And like by law and by government. And I think, I don't know, it feels like it affected my parents in a way that I don't think they are conscious of. And because we were just like raised not like 100% white, but like a bit, you know, yeah. Like we went to schools that had mostly white people in it, and I'm like really proud of where I come from, but I feel like I'm still like learning to connect with it because we weren't exposed to it as much as I think we could or should have been like growing up.
How have your parents been instrumental in your music career?
My mom's my greatest proponent. She like is so supportive, and when it sort of started to kick off when I was a teenager, like 17, 18, she was spearheading like all of the management duties and really trying to champion me in the scene as like a young person. And she found like my publisher and she sought out the studios to record, and even though she knew nothing about the music industry and nothing about its places and its people, and like she did all the research and all that stuff, and like obviously they forked out a lot of money to pay for things like legal fees and stuff. So my parents, like, you know, and they're also, they weren't like rich. Like my parents just like tried to work really hard. Like my dad worked like 2 or 3 jobs at any given time, and my mom worked one and occasionally none. So my dad also had to shoulder all of that stuff, and just like, yeah, they tried really hard for me to have like as many opportunities as I possibly could. And that's sort of, I think, part and parcel of why I am where I am now, is because I was given that lift right at the beginning by my mom.
And that's very Filipina of your mom. Yeah. Loving music, singing. Yeah. Because a lot of Filipinos love to sing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, my
grandma's. Have you tried karaoke or videoke?
I mean, when I was growing up, it's like obviously a different form, but my mom like used to buy the karaoke DVDs, and like me and my sister we had like 2, and we just like repeat the same songs like over and over again, our favorites, which was really fun. My uncle, my tio, has like the karaoke box and yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, my extended family really loves that stuff for sure. And I've done it not so much in my adult life, but when I was a kid, for sure.
Yeah, that's one of our favorite pastimes at home. I think every Filipino family has that box.
Yeah.
At home. So we get to sing every time and whenever we have visitors. Yeah. So that's our form of entertainment at home.
Yeah, I think that's really wonderful.
And now I also had a peek of your Nam Tan Instagram account. Not that I'm stalking you, but yeah. I saw your vegan.
Yeah, sinigang. Yes. Oh, did I put it on there?
Yeah, I saw it there. And wow. How did you make it?
Honestly, like, it was just fine. I think because sinigang, right, you need, like, animal fat to, like, make it really come together. And obviously can't do that when you're vegan. I just followed a recipe. And it was good enough, though. I think the tamarind was, like, a bit too strong. Like, it then needed to be something that, like, balance it out a bit more, and I think I need to do a bit more research on like how to do that as a vegan, because I think it's possible. Like, yeah. There's a lot of solutions nowadays. I'm just like not that advanced to cook. I don't think it really like takes time and experimentation. But if you just like Google vegan sinigang or whatever, like people will have things that they've themselves have experimented with and are happy with, and it's on there. I want to do a vegan adobo. I'm really intent on that because I don't know, that was my favorite. It's just hard when you don't like, like this, the particular texture of chicken is, I don't think that's been replicated in vegan food yet. So we'll see how it goes.
Awesome. But we don't have any much time left. So I would like to hear your message to all our kababayans, all the Filipinos here in Australia.
And my message to all Filipinos is like, thank you for your support and for identifying with me and sort of like accepting me as part of the community, because that's really important to me. And yeah, just like lots of love. It's very nice. And I'm happy to be a representative for everyone.
Thank you so much. There you have it, guys. And prepare to vote for Jessica Lee Cicero as Montaigne.
Nice yung bang makinig na iba pang kwento na tulad ito? Makinig sa Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, o sa iba pang podcast apps.